Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
February 25th, 1987, the book Communion, A True Story hit the bookshelves and by the end of 1 week rocketed to a spot on the national bestsellers list. The narrative that the author laid out was of a terrifying experience in encountering beings that were not of this earth. These visitors, whose descriptions resonated with others who had similar experiences, performed nightmarish examinations on the unsuspecting author and left him with what he claims was a fragmented memory and debilitating maladies immediately following his encounter. He would publicly acknowledge his experience and attest to its veracity, as he seemed to pass three separate lie detector tests administered on different occasions. His book, whose cover features the bone-chilling portrait of what many people would identify as a gray alien, would go on to become a permanent fixture in the field of UFO abductions. This case file, join the theorists as they hold on to their butts and get it in the rear with the alien gear with Whitley Strieber's Abduction Experience.
Welcome to Alien Theorists Theorizing, Case File 205, Whitley Strieber's Space Erotica.
I'm Brayden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
And that's Pody Andrew.
What? What's happening? Sorry.
We're recording a podcast on our regular scheduled Monday night.
Oh, well, I'm not watching football.
Of course not.
No.
That football, that jersey doesn't scream it at all. The second screen over to your left.
Game's shut off. It's over. Don't read anything out. None of the comments. Nothing.
You got
to we're losing. I don't care. It is what it is. I'm Lions fan. I'm used to it, but just don't read any of the comments. Let me be sad afterwards. Don't spoil my sadness.
Okay.
That's fair. Just a quick heads up, we're going to be, you know, trigger warning, fair warning, we're going to be talking about some alien rape at some point.
Pretty much.
And cock. There's going to be cock talk. So trigger warning, and Whitley Strieber's cock specifically. So just trigger, I'm just letting everyone.
Said that word way too many times for one podcast.
I know, I'm just triggered. Everyone know if there's a trigger.
Half the people turned it off.
We're going to be talking about it.
Half people already turned it off, so perfect.
All right. But before we get into this, I just wanted to make sure if you're listening to this, you haven't been to our YouTube channel, search Alien Theorist Theorizing. We've got tons of YouTube videos. You basically get a couple free live streams on there. Me and Zell doing a UFO review. New UFO videos daily. Go check it out, Alien Theorist Theorizing on YouTube.
Why not? You're on YouTube all the time. Anyway, down the rabbit hole. Boom.
Click on us.
Easy.
Yeah, short up those algorithms and yeah. I can get down that rabbit hole.
And all you get is UFO videos. And hopefully that's it.
Yeah. Tonight we're talking about Whitley Strieber.
Famous abduction case or story.
The man, the myth, the legend.
Book.
Author of Communion. Anyone see that movie with Christopher Walken?
No.
I didn't watch it.
No, I didn't.
Are you sure? Christopher Walken?
I'm pretty sure it's David Bowie. You know what movie I did see? Hunger, also written by Whitley Strieber.
Pretty sure it's David Bowie.
Is it David Bowie?
No, that's The Hunger.
No, I'm making a joke because Christopher Walken wears a ridiculous amount of makeup. It looks ridiculous in that fucking movie. It's hilarious.
But he's in two Whitley Strieber movies.
No, I did not watch it, but should I put it on the list? Or no?
That's what I did for research. I thought this is what we're supposed to do.
Oh, okay. I read some of the chapters of the book, and that's the ones Dan recommended.
Books are for nerds.
I wonder why. It's definitely, yeah, you don't need to watch it. It's not the best movie. I haven't seen it in years. I remember I watched it. I considered myself somewhat of a film buff when I was like in high school. So I would watch every fucking movie imaginable. And that was one of the ones. And it always stuck with me. Not for good reasons.
Not for good reasons.
What reasons? Bad reasons?
Bad reasons?
Well, Christopher Walken's performance really stuck out to me.
As a poor...
He's always stuck with you.
A poor Walken?
Yeah, he's just... Well, he's one of my favorite actors of all time.
Okay. But, you do... That's so, one of the few perfect impressions you do.
I do, yeah. Well, yeah. anyways, let's get into it. Keys File 205, Whitley Strieber. Why are we talking about this guy?
Well, Whitley Strieber is author of the seminal novel... Communion, A True Story, like you mentioned. This book is probably one of the, if not the most influential books within UFO culture. I mean, I was aware of it. I know it. Most people, if you look up the book, if you type in Communion, A True Story, and that the cover, the original cover art of that book doesn't spring to your mind, like you didn't see it.
Everyone's seen it.
It's very well known for having the cover art is of your very, it is the archetypal representation of a gray alien. Like if you look at it, like that's what people see.
Yeah. I mean the gray alien on this cover has been on the beaches of Honolulu and it's been bronzing up. But yes, it is in fact a gray. We should call it a tan. It's a tan. a small tan.
Previous to writing A Communion, like Whitley Strieber was known to be a somewhat successful science fiction and fantasy writer. He wrote at least two books that became movies. Like he wrote Wolfen, I think that's also a movie, and then he wrote The Hunger, the original book, which got adapted into a movie. If you haven't seen The Hunger, that is a rad movie, kind of. It's got David Bowie and Susan Sarandon, and so it's a pretty interesting movie.
A couple bonus points.
It's well
right
known
there.
For it slots right in with Whitley Strieber erotica. It's a lot of vampire eroticism. So if you're into that, you read these two books back to back, you're covered.
If you thought Twilight was hot,
if Rizal is just normal eroticism, is what you're saying?
Just the regular
Rizal watches,
the regular kind,
just regular Pino.
Yep. No big deal.
So Communion is the story that Whitley Strieber puts forth about his experience with an abduction. Now, to his credit, he doesn't really refer to the abduction, the abductors as extraterrestrials. He kind of always, he makes a point to just name them visitors. Necessarily point out that these are extraterrestrials. And I don't think in any part of the story, the original parts, does he ever really remember them saying like they're from somewhere else or they represent themselves. He always has the view that they're there. They're possibly extraterrestrials. So we can talk about his entire experience. Like
he says visitors, but he also directed the person who made the cover art.
This is true.
And I mean, the cover art paints quite the fucking picture. I'd be like, I would be like, well, that looks like an alien to me,
dude. It's an exact gray alien.
That must be a visitor.
So on December 26, 1985, Whitley Strieber and his family, compiled of his wife and his young son, were at their vacation log cabin in a secluded corner of upstate New York. Now, we're going to go through the original account. We'll go through the original recount of the experience as Whitley Strieber remembered it when he was recording it in his journal prior to the regression hypnosis sessions that he participated in later. So prior to that, his original recounting of the story, in the middle of the night, he woke up on the night of December 26th, and he wasn't sure what time it was, but he found himself awake. He remembers some type of peculiar whooshing or a swirling noise that seemed to be coming from downstairs in the living room.
He kind of settles.
And he starts to settle back, not really knowing what the sound was and not feeling any compelling. He doesn't really feel compelled to go examine or investigate what the noise is. He kind of settles back into bed.
Honestly, that it's because like that's believable. Like what? I also would not go and investigate. I'd be like, I'm not doing it.
What are you gonna hide under your covers?
Well, yes.
Yeah.
Your fucking wife and your kids there.
I think and, you forget that I have neither of those things.
Yeah, but that's but you gotta put yourself in that situation.
Well, he says though, like for some reason he like checked all the rooms and closets and under the bed. He had an alarm system put in. So when he heard this downstairs, he said he had like a little like a control panel beside his bed and what shows like all the green lights, like nothing's been tricked. So he's like, right. Oh, we heard
he did all that stuff before going to bed. Yeah. Like that was the nightly routine kind of.
Yeah.
So if he's paranoid enough to get an alarm system to check everything before he goes to bed, and then he hears something downstairs and he's like, eh.
Yeah. Like, and later he would explain this reaction as something that was out of the ordinary. Since you guys already commented on it, it's like this is something that he would go on to later say that his reactions in this. His kind of unusual reaction to this sound speaks to its credibility. That's what he feels that he wouldn't, a normal person wouldn't act like this. A normal person would have went down and checked that out. But because he didn't feel the need to go down there, he feels like that is part of the abduction experience.
Or he was fucking dreaming.
Oh shit. Hold on a second.
Hold on.
Cue the sirens. Is this dream police?
Think about it.
You're gonna get the dream police.
You wake up in a dream. You're dreaming. You're not gonna be compelled to get up and get out of bed. I'd be like, fucking.
Are you telling me if Whitley Strieber called into Cosmic Channels, we'd hang up on him?
I'm a Buzz Strieber. Okay,
so
I believe him. All right,
A Buzz Strieber.
I'm a Buzz Strieber. Okay,
Buzz Strieber.
He wakes up. The sirens are going. Is what you're saying? Possibly.
Possibly. So okay. There's definitely an APB out for Whitley Strieber.
Okay.
For the Gene Police. Now, at this point, when he settles back in, he notices that one of the double doors leading into his bedroom is moving closed. Now, he remembers noting this because of the way that the doors, how they are... function like in relation to the room, yeah. Because that would mean that they would be
like opening. They open and close. Yeah,
right. Well, it's like the way that they would, if it were moving closed, then it would
how they
be,
function. Yeah, they open, they fucking close.
Well, in relation to the door, whether they open out or they open
these,
in.
Yeah, these exactly. Particular doors, they do open, but they also close.
They close. They open and close. But no, he did say like they.
Indubitably.
He said the way they opened, like I think he said they opened outwards. And it seemed right. Like something was like pulling them outwards. Like it was opening, like someone was pulling the doors. Like, so they're double doors, like a French style door, double swing doors pulling outwards.
And then as soon as he sees it close, this is when he says his first visitor arrived. This was what he described as a small compact figure, roughly three and a half feet tall, had a smooth rounded hat on. With a sharp rim that jutted out about 4 inches on the side.
Like a bowler hat?
That's what I thought.
Like Liu Kang. The great Kung Lao.
Oh, for a second, I thought you were going to say Lu Bega, and I'm like, this is all coming around.
Could also be Lu Bega. He is the hat man. He said it.
So he,
that is canon.
He's short and stocky?
Yeah.
Are we sure it's not Dan?
No, Dan only wears a cap. A baseball cap.
Yeah, it's all around the sides. If I had a Kung Lao hat, I probably would wear it.
I mean, we don't know that you don't.
I wish I owned one.
He puts it on immediately after recording the case file. He switches hats.
So with this, he describes the face of this, what he noticed about the face, and he saw pretty much just two dark holes for eyes and just a black downturning line of the mouth, which would just become like an O. And I think he remembers it describing it and seeing like it's an almost O. Like a mask. Well, it's almost like a mask.
Like the like scream mask. Well, that'd be creepy.
And then so from shoulder to midriff, he said that there seemed to be some type of square plate with concentric circles etched into it. Mm. And then beneath that, there was some type of what he described as a rectangular appliance of some type.
Yeah. He also he kind of referenced that like the plate, like a breastplate. He almost said it was like an armor.
Saiyan armor. That's what it's saying, armor.
Yeah. Like a little breastplate.
Yeah. Well, he refers to it as armor, and then in the same sentence is like coveralls, and I'm like, well, that's not armor.
Sounds like Saiyan armor.
That's a mechanic. Oh, you know what? That is Saiyan armor.
That's Saiyan armor.
That's a good point. I never thought about that, but now that I'm thinking it in my head, I'm like, that's what he was describing.
And that might fit. It might just be Krillin with a hat on, because this creature moved quite fast, and he remembers it rushing into the room, moving quite quickly. And then his next conscious memory is of being in motion, moving.
So he sees this thing, and it sees him, and it just comes running at him into the
right.
Bed.
I imagine he'd be like, you know, it's just running right up on him.
Wait, did the little dude's naked?
No, Whitley Strieber is.
Oh, okay. I thought he'd like just shedded his fucking Saiyan armor and sprinted at him naked, so like moving around real quick.
This is how I like to picture it. Whitley Strieber sitting there. He's wearing full pajamas. I'm talking slip-on slippers, matching PJs, full top, robe, and one of those like long slumber caps. You know what I mean?
Sleepy Gary.
Yeah, right? And then he's like, he sees this thing come in and he's like, well, that's interesting. And it speeds up. Next thing you know, he's just floating. And he's butt ass naked. All his pajamas that he was just wearing seemingly gone.
And that's what he remembers. That's what his initial memory is. The next memory is of him just completely naked with no physical sensation at all. It was like he was just floating. And then after that, he says he remembers sitting in a small sort of depression, like a crater of some type or something, like a small depression in the ground or like a bowl out in the woods.
Just like a little, like a ditch in the woods. He's there.
Or like a little hollow butt naked ditch. Some type.
I wonder, you think maybe this little guy with the fucking bowler hat was a Regaru, and he came and bit him and turned him into a Regaru, and then he woke up naked in the fucking forest?
You mean a Rougarou?
Or a Rougarou?
Maybe.
And so he noticed another small individual sitting to the left of this depression, so outside of it a bit. And he remembers now at this point he couldn't move his head or his hands or any part of his body except his eyes. So it fits in with most of experiences that other abductees have had recollection of.
So they hit him with some type of paralytic then.
Yeah.
So he's completely paralyzed
except his eyeballs. Yeah.
Right. Or some type of psychic restraint or some type or something
like
that.
Which is interesting because like when we use paralytics, they usually they paralyze everything. So you wouldn't be able to breathe anything. So it's interesting what type of fucking.
This is some Professor X shit, like Professor X level.
Wait,
like some psychic.
Andrew, when you use that stuff, you can't breathe.
Yeah. Like that's why when we sedate people and we use a paralytic, we have to breathe for them.
Oh, okay. So they have more advanced medicine, or as Braden said, it's some type of like psychic ability. Like they're paralyzing him with their mind.
Yeah.
Or some other technology we don't
know. Well, as we're going to find out later, I believe the psychic paralysis to be more of a leading theory.
Right.
So now there's not only one figure, but two figures. The original one, the small one with the breastplate armor that he had initially seen is now gone, absent from view. And now he has the two figures sitting next to him. He noticed the first one sitting on the left, which he said he gave out the distinct impression, or he had a feeling that it was a female, of some type of female.
Ooh, with a lady.
And his initial, when he was writing his journal, trying to remember what happened when the memory started coming out, surfacing at some point.
This is when the music hits.
And then he also noticed that there's another figure on the right side. And this one.
It's another lady.
This one was, well, he wasn't really sure because this one was nearly invisible, or that's how he remembers it, that this one he couldn't really make out exactly what he was, but he knew that it seemed to be working on something very quickly with its hands or manipulating something on the side of his head, on that side of his body. The next thing after that is he remembers being in a type of what he described messy round room. This is
messy.
I don't know how you find, like, if it were on a spaceship, I don't know how you would define like a messy room on a spaceship or something like that.
Well,
I would be screaming, this isn't sterile.
The description of this, like when I first read this and I was looking into it, it really reminded me if anyone's had a concussion or a good conky before a bell rung, you get these situations where it's like you seemingly pop into another spot. And to give an example, I used to play contact sports. So I would get hit in lacrosse and you'd get
ACL
your bell rung.
Explode.
And then I'd get hit on the floor and all of a sudden I would be like, I'd be on the bench and I have no recollection of running to the bench. And I'm like totally calm. I'm just kind of confused. I'm just like, well, this is strange. How long have I been here? And then I'd be like, just as I'm like, this is quite interesting. Maybe a little cause for concern. Boom, I'm in the dressing room. It's like between periods. And I'm like, something is amiss here. I know it. But I don't even have really time to, I'm still confused. I'm trying to figure things out. So I'm just looking around. And I'm like, well, I definitely walked here. Like, what the hell is going on?
Saying you're abducted by aliens, like while you're playing lacrosse.
Yeah. So then, boom.
Time loss.
Next thing you know, I'm in the shower. Right, and then you're just kind of like, oh,
and then Whitley Strieber's there.
Yeah, you have a distinct memory of some small Kung Lao looking figure with
sprinting at you naked.
I'm like, who are you? But just that description of his, like how he, like is just seemingly transported. His memory just like boom, boom. It reminded me a lot of that, like concussion symptoms, like of when you first get your bell rung.
Well, yeah.
Have you ever been sedated before?
No. Well, I mean,
that's the same type of thing. It's like the lights go out, and then when they come back on, you're somewhere else, and you're startled.
You have no idea.
I've been like put under with anesthesia.
Yeah, like so you've been put under. Yeah. So same thing. Like when you woke up from being sedated, it's the same fucking thing where you're like, what the fuck?
Well, I see the thing with the anesthesia that's different than the like concussion thing for me is like when you come out of anesthesia, I don't quite remember having conscious thought right away. It's like, you're so groggy. You're like, where am I? What's going on? Whereas like with a concussion, it was still me. And I'm just like,
I remember
peculiar.
When I got put under to get my shoulder put back together and I fucking sprung out of bed being like, what the fuck? And I look beside me and there's this chick that I went to high school with that just got fucking her boobs done. She's like, oh, hey. I'm like, whoa, like, what are you doing here? She's like, oh, I got my boobs done and like pulled her fucking thing down. I'm like,
okay.
Hey, maybe I imagined that. I don't know.
You don't even remember.
Dude, no, it was surreal. Like, and I haven't seen her since. I've always wanted to be like, hey, did that happen?
Did you actually get your boobs done? Or
So I don't know. It's bizarre.
So he wakes up in a messy room.
Would attribute this later to just like these are the memories coming in bursts, like short bursts, like when he started recovering his memories from this experience. And so when he kind of picks up details, he kind of picks out the details of the room that he has been transported to, this messy room. He does remember that it was a circular chamber of some type. It had a dome on it. And I think what led him to define it as messy or to identify as messy is that he remembers there being some type of clothing or what he believed was clothing or it looked to him to be some type of garment was thrown on the floor, whether it belonged to him or these visitors. He's not quite sure at this point. Now, there are more figures in this one. Now, these are tiny, smaller figures. We're now moving around him at what he just said was great speed. So they're moving with some type of urgency around him doing something. And then the next memory is of him seated on a bench, leaning against a wall, and he remembers the colors of tan and gray of this thing. And then it jumps forward a little bit further. The next memory that he has is that he's remember being shown some type of tiny gray box that had a sliding lid. And then this next memory is that he has a tiny squat person, tiny little person, crouching as if huddled over something. And he has been given the box and he slides it open, revealing an extremely shiny, hair-thin needle on a black surface.
So these little aliens, little gnomes, pretty much.
Little Jawas or something. Like
they give him a box. They allow him to slide it open, and there is a needle inside.
Right.
And he, I mean, honestly, like, listen.
Listening.
I don't understand the purpose of this. Like, I'm like, what would you logically do? Like, I'm trying to think in my head when I got this, where I'm like, okay, you open this and there's like a tiny needle and you're like, is this a gift?
No, you're going to grab the closest little prick next to you and put it up to his fucking neck. And be like, yeah. Little shits.
Yeah.
Give me my clothes. And
it would probably
home.
Help in your reaction or, you know, trying to contextualize it being that he suddenly became aware or he was told, and this is what his general impression was, that this tiny needle was to be inserted directly into his brain.
Oh, no thanks.
Why? Why give it to him?
Well, you want him to you'd see it. You're like, hey.
He's got to put it in his own brain?
We're going to put this in your brain.
He's like, oh, yeah, let me just help you here. He starts.
Yeah, right here.
It's actually, like, it's excellent because, like, this is like pure B horror movie because at this point, as soon as he gets his message, he starts just uncontrollably wailing and screaming. Ah! Ah! And like you would. And his reasoning is because it's not because he was terrified of, like, he's become aware, like, these things are testing, he's on an alien spaceship. It's because he was worried that this needle was going to ruin a great mind that was his own.
My mind is so good. It's the best
mind. My mind is so good. Like, yeah. How could I? You're going to ruin my great mind? It's such a good mind.
So, yeah, he starts screaming. At this point, he's not really sure if it's a psychic scream that he's just screaming inside of his head or he audibly begins screaming. But the visitors are obviously aware of it because they ask him, they pose him the question, how can we stop you screaming?
Don't put that fucking needle in my head.
He's like, well, since you're asking, close
and
the
he
box.
Responds with, he responds with, you can let me smell you.
So, now, are they asking him telepathically or are they speaking English to him?
He's not sure at this point.
He's just not sure.
He just has the distinct impression that they are asking him of him, whether it's straight directly into his mind or, you know, orally or whatever, that audibly, like, telling him, like, how can we stop you screaming? So, and his response, he said rather quickly, is, you can let me smell you.
No. I'm calling into question this whole great mind thing. Like, the fuck is that going to solve?
Let me smell you.
Well,
okay.
How about you sedate me at least? But, like, Jesus.
His explanation from what, like, interviews I've heard with him is that he was already not believing his eyes, like what he was seeing. And he was not believing his ears, like what he was hearing. Like, so he was just like, his weird logic was, well, let me sniff your fingers and then I'll
sniff your fingers. We're talking about 13-year-olds here? Like, what the
fuck? Sniff my fingers.
Sniff those fingers. And he's
right.
Like,
that's his reasoning is that I can't, right now, I don't know if I'm dreaming or not. I don't know what's going on. My eyes could be lying to me, but smell, as most of us are aware, is one of the strongest senses linked to memory. So he's thinking that if he smells this, he'll be able to remember it later, at least, or something, you know, it'll trigger a memory or something like that. So he wants to be able to smell this. That is his unconscious or just his really reactionary reasoning to why he says, "You can let me smell you." That's what he says. And so the visitor obliges and he
just gives a little shrug and he's like, all right.
That's pretty fucking weird, but okay.
And rubs just, his two fingers under his nose. Willie Streber gives a...
Yeah. And apparently these visitors smell like his initial impression is that they smell like cardboard and cinnamon. Those are the two scents that stood out to him the most. And
a box of cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Yeah.
This is a box of Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
He just rubbed the box.
You know what? That would be quite reassuring.
But you can't keep the prize.
But as soon as that's done, as soon as the smelling's over, boom, quick. Bing bang, and he said he felt something a sharp sensation in the back of his head, and the procedure.
So they went
because one of them snuck behind him.
They went through the back of the head.
They went through occipital lobe.
Just bang in the back of the head. That's what he said. That's what he felt.
Occipital lobe is in the back of the head, Andrew.
Yes, sir.
Is that above the medulla oblongata?
Yeah, definitely.
And the
medulla oblongata is going to be at like the base.
That's the stem, right? Almost at the stem.
Yeah.
So they shove this needle through the back of his head in order to get whatever they need, and it's over in a flash. Like they boom in, out, done.
Yeah.
Did he turn into a babbling maniac, and was his mind ruined?
Well, that's why. We all know this because that's what makes alligators so angry. We learned that in fucking Waterboy.
They got all them teeth and no toothbrush.
After the procedure is done, it's done, and he doesn't feel like too much. There's still a bit more to the experience. So he said that he remembers it being able to observe some type of operating theater.
So and then, just to break this down, like my understanding of this is like, you know, there's the table, you know, you see the gallery up above with the people watching, you know, like
some guys eating Junior Mints.
Yeah, just sitting there popping them like Junior Mints. Quite interesting. And it's delicious.
And when he is in this operating theater, he's introduced in this operating theater. Streber says that he realizes that there is a distinction between figures in the entire experience that he had. So not only are there's the figures that he's seen that have the very, very archetypal gray, they have the slanted black eyes, but then there's also ones that are a little bit shorter, a little bit different in form. And their eyes seem to be more round than the ones with the slanted ones, but they still kind of still look similar to each other. And then at this point, four figures that have been witnessed total is what he remembers.
Well, and this
four different ones.
Yeah. And this is interesting because, you know, we might be able to take from this that this is maybe two potential alien civilizations working together on some sort of research project.
It seemed like it was kind of like a class system though, right? Because there was certain ones that were working on him, like scientifically, they were handling all the tools. And then there was different ones that were used to go and like pick him up and carry him into the fucking ship. Right. Like, and he had different names for them.
Yeah,
If you go back, like we can count them off. Really. You have the first one that he encountered, the small robotic figure that had entered his room initially. Then you had the stocky figures, the ones that had come out, and these ones had been suited up in blue overalls is what he, you know, what he saw.
And
he
or observed. Sane armor.
And these ones seem to have, he remembers them having pug noses.
A crushed in nose.
Human-like mouths.
Yeah, how did he know they had human-like mouths? What's his reference for that?
I mean, people mouths, like they're not like little insectoid bits or whatever.
All right.
And these ones, like Andrew said, these ones seem to, each figure seemed to be responsible for some part of the process of this thing. So these ones with the pug noses seem to be responsible for moving Streber from place to place.
These were the short, stocky ones?
These were the short, stocky ones, yeah.
Were they singing at all while they were carrying them? was one of them grumpy and the other one sneezing? Like fucking dwarfs?
I don't. Yeah, there's no.
They're wearing little coveralls and shit. It's perfect.
I mean, it adds up.
I hope
that are Oompa Loompas.
Yeah, exactly.
Then you
yeah.
have the slender, tall, black, slanted eyed ones, which are the ones that you on the cover of the communion book, and which you would very much identify as a gray. Mm. And then you have the smaller figures that were in the operating theater that had the similar shaped heads, but were distinct in having large black eyes that were more round in shape, what he described as like large buttons.
So we got four figures that he sees after he gets the needle through the back of the skull into his brain for whatever means they're looking for.
De medulla oblongata.
Mm-hmm. But they're not, but that was only the prologue until we get to the main event.
Yeah. So before they take him back to the messy room, let's take a quick beer break. Refill. We'll be.
You guys couldn't clean this place up before you stick a needle in my brain and give me names.
Come on,
and shit.
Like, man.
Come on. Play, man.
This place, you can fucking, you can travel across the fucking universe, but you can't clean this shit up.
This place even sterile.
Come on, man.
Hey, no. You know how many Whitley Strebers they had in there before Whitley? You know what I mean? Like, it's a red room, baby.
Think about that, though. Like, what is your, like, think about your priorities. You're about to get needled in the fucking head, and you're looking around and being like, man, this place is fucking messy.
This place is a shithole.
This place is a messy room.
Maybe there's maybe he had a messy house, and they're trying to make him feel at home. Just quick, throw clothes on the ground. He'll think it's better. All right, we'll get back to his abduction in a second. Grab a beer. We'll be right back.
Want truly hydrated skin? Meet Osea's body care breakthrough, Hyaluronic Body Serum. It's clinically proven to increase hydration by 161%. It's lightweight, fast-absorbing, and delivers 24 hours of hydration for silky smooth skin without any sticky afterfeel. Treat your skin to clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order with code SUMMER at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code SUMMER.
So now we're back. Back to the messy room for round two.
Damn dirty laundry. So,
Streber remembers being taken back to where these clothes or these garments had been strewn about this room after being taken to the operating theater of some type and either being perhaps like presented or shown off or something like that. And then
look at this fucking specimen of a man. If you see what it looks like.
And then they escorted him back to the more intimate surroundings of the messy room where the stocky figures then proceeded to his recollection, insert a long gray scaly object which seemed to be triangular in shape, directly into his rectum.
Oh, oh no. Triangular?
Triangular in shape. That is how he described it.
Spit on it first?
Yeah, they at least lube it up.
There's no
mention
of lubrication.
They let him sniff it beforehand. It's this thing takes a dark turn here. It's like all of a sudden this is not fun anymore for anyone.
Well, I mean, you lost me at the needles of the fucking brain, but yeah, that's awful too.
Yeah, he remembers this thing not really. His initial kind of like reasoning for this, like he tried to reason out why these things would do this to him, why it would insert this thing. And he said that perhaps it was up there, like he felt it going in, and he said that it perhaps had something to do with maybe taking a fecal sample, like we've theorized before, like why do aliens seem to be preoccupied.
Why was I
with
blessed with such sweet cheeks?
That this was perhaps taking a fecal sample or some type of exploring the digestive tract for some reason, for enlightenment on research or something like that.
Yeah, if you're taking a scientific avenue, that, I mean, yeah, collect the fecal matter or what, like, what's this, whatever this thing is, what's it eating? Like what we're gonna
just get him to shit in a cup,
but like they can
to sodomize the poor guy.
They
with can, a triangle object.
That's what I mean.
The scaly triangle object.
Yeah,
guys, like that, banging him with a grayscale fucking triangle.
Honestly, the second you say scale, I go, well, that means it's either going in easy and coming out hard, or going in hard and coming out easy. Like when you say scaly, I'm like, well, motherfucker, scales are only smooth if you rub them one way. So it's
directional.
So the very last memory that he has of this, that's not the final one. The last memory he has from the original recollection is that he they put an incision on his finger. And then after that, he woke up.
Just a quick little paper cut on the tip of the finger? Right. Or?
And that completes his initial memory that he wrote down prior to doing any of the hypnotic regression later that he would go to.
And I don't know if any of you know this. This just popped in my head. I never even thought of it before when I was looking into this. Is he a diabetic?
Not at the time. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure
what his health situation is currently, but I don't think so.
Because he's pricking his finger?
The finger prick, I was like, to me, are they just taking blood? Like, that's what I... And then I was like, would it make more sense if he was a diabetic and they were doing it to check some sort of levels?
Well, even if they could have just done that to check his blood sugar anywhere, but they could have also done that from the fucking needle they inserted into his brain, I'd imagine. Mm.
Or the pyramid they shoved up his ass, I imagine.
I mean, listen, you're intergalactically traveling. You're fucking... space aliens with all this science, you should know triangles don't fit up asses. You should understand that.
Triangle yeah. into round it. Circle.
It's not a good
work.
Shape.
No, it's not great.
Maybe they have triangle asses and that's just their tool. That's all they have.
When size fits all.
They shit triangles. That's what happens. And there's like, well, hey, I mean.
Hey, that makes sense. That's genius.
They're like, there's one out front. Is there anything we can do to stop the screaming?
Don't put a scaly triangle up my ass.
So originally after like immediately following the experience, he had no real memory of this happening. He had no memories of this experience going on, but he did experience in the following months a marked and very drastic change in his general disposition. Like after this, you know, after he had finally recalled all this, he recalls feeling very like he started having kind of mood swings, becoming like
violated.
That too. He also said he was having mood swings, kind of shifting in and out of a kind of like morose and almost like pseudo depression, things like this, becoming very quick tempered with his wife and son, which he remembered and felt regretful of later. He was having...
God damn it, woman, I told you to put all the triangle-shaped shit away. I don't want to see that anymore.
He noted having more, more frequent headaches. The finger that he had gotten the incision on, or that he remembers getting the incision on, he said that it started to kind of ache, or, you know, it almost seemed infected, some type of redness or swelling in that on that finger. And then also, yeah, it was followed by, he said he remembers having some type of rectal pain.
Of course, it was a triangle into a circle.
Serpent, yeah, going in there. Like at the start, it's good. Very quickly, it turns bad for you.
In his book, Strieber says that he never really was interested in the...
Hold on. Hey, Dan, stop. Is it good, Braden?
I'm just saying at the beginning.
Is it good? At the beginning, it's good? Or is it less terrible? Is it good or is it less terrible at the beginning?
All right. Well, I don't know. I don't want to put words in his mouth.
give us your words.
It's here. So,
my words?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe the first bit's not too bad. You're like, oh, what's going on here? And then you're like, whoa, is this? Whoa, slow down.
Okay, stop. What's the safe word?
Yeah.
What's the safe word?
Pineapples.
I was just going to say pineapple. Is that from something?
I don't know.
I don't know.
That's weird that it popped in.
But like, you're like, whoa. Like it's and it also depends on which way these scales are, because it could be like immensely terrible from
one way from the get-go, yeah,
right, and then a quick easy out, right? Who knows? I'm just saying. It's
not speaking from experience.
I've never sat on any triangles.
No, of course not.
No.
So now in his
book...
Not
that there's anything wrong with that, if that's what you're into.
Nothing at all.
Strieber would go on to say that he, before this, he never was really invested in UFOs or extraterrestrials or any type of that kind of culture. He said that he remembers perhaps getting like a book from his brother-in-law on one Christmas of kind of UFO stories of that kind or something like that. But before this, he said he had never really kind of been in or be considered that. Like he wrote mostly, he didn't write science fiction really. He usually wrote like horror stories, things like that. Vampires, werewolves, that stuff.
Good shit.
And so he wasn't really in this. So he was like, I can't be dreaming these things. This stuff that happened to me. It's not something that I would just pop into my head randomly. I don't have any reason to have this stuff in my mind. But at some point, he remembers this, like trying to figure out what's going on. He decides that he needs to get in contact with somebody about what's happening to him. Because at first, Strieber says that he felt like he was going insane. Like these things that had happened to him, which felt very real to him, he needed to talk to somebody about this. So therapy was on the table. He was like, I need to talk to someone about this. And then him and his wife remember or recalled the name somehow, Bud Hopkins became involved in their case. So Bud Hopkins, if you don't know, is a big name in, or has been a big name in UFO culture, like a very prominent figure in a UFO into abduction support groups and things like, he's formed UFO abduction support groups before. And I think he still has them. He is very invested in the UFO circles.
Is he a bigger name in ufology than Dr. Sprinkles?
Maybe now. But somehow he remembered that Bud Hopkins was also, this is where some of the stuff gets a little weird for me, is that Bud Hopkins was big in the art scene because Bud Hopkins is also like an artist or an art collector of some note. And he was big in the art scene in upstate New York. And so when he found Bud Hopkins' phone number and dialed him, thinking maybe Bud would be able to help him, he found out that Bud Hopkins only lives like a 10-minute walk from where he was living at in upstate New York in their log cabin.
Oh, man. Pretty convenient to be.
And so after talking with him, Bud Hopkins taking him at his word, being like, you experienced something, we need to get you to a regressive, get you into a regressive hypnotizing, like a regression hypnosis session.
That was the go-to back in this time frame. Right. Like that was like the thing to say, like if you lost memories, regressive hypnosis was like that. That was it.
But if you don't know,
Sprinkles must have been busy.
You're about to know.
It was on its way out, but it was still the favored go-to. It was definitely the favored therapy to recover memories, or that's what a lot of people believed.
Dr. Sprinkles obviously found something better to do, like birthdays or something.
So he didn't want to go to, Strieber was trying to approach this as clinically as possible. So he decided that he wasn't going to go to he tried to not go to a doctor that Hopkins knew or that was in the same circles as Hopkins, or attended on a lot of UFO things like that. He was thinking that might taint or somehow, contaminate his recollections. And so, but he still took on Bud Hopkins' recommendation of a Dr. Klein, Dr. Donald Klein, who was a psychiatrist in the area. And so he would go on to attend sessions with Donald Klein, with Bud Hopkins in the room at the same time.
What?
Yeah, that was something that kind of got me. I was like, wait, so you're going to go to a hip. You don't want to go to a guy that knows Bud Hopkins, but you're going to take a recommendation from Bud Hopkins. And then Bud Hopkins is going to go with you and be in the same room while you're in the regressive hypnosis state. Okay. All right. And after they, a couple sessions, I think one or two sessions, they got into it. Donald Klein regressed him back to that December 26th night. And then more details would fill in about what happened. More sordid details about what happened. Perhaps a little bit more traumatizing than the triangular scale thing up the rectum.
Huh.
So when you go back into it, if you go into the book and you read the experiences, you have like Whitley Strieber being like, okay, I remember this one figure specifically that seemed to be, he felt was female the entire time. The one that we mentioned that he was sitting next to him on the, in the depression. And that one kind of followed him. He remembers sitting next to it when we said he was sitting on the bench. And they were showing him the needle, or they showing him the needle that was going to be implanted into his brain.
Right.
He remembers this figure, also female, being there with him. And then in the regressive hypnosis, sessions, he was saying that this one was like conversing with him. It was talking to him about the procedure or something like this. So when they were talking about, like, when he started screaming, that was the one that was talking to him. That's what he recalls in those sessions.
I got a quick question about, he thinks it's female. He just thought that, or did, like, did have alien boobs, or like what? Well, like, how, that's how what did he know?
That's what he said. He felt, he just until felt later it. In the regressive hypnosis, he said, I got the feeling of a female until he looked down and then he felt something or saw something.
Oh, so he copped a feel.
A little alien boob feel there.
That's why he got a triangle up the ass.
He just wanted, like, to okay, let buddy. Any, he wanted to let everyone know he's not into any of that funny stuff.
But he did, he does recall observing, or
they're definitely lady aliens.
Let's get that clear.
Well, that one definitely might not have been a female, or it was perhaps a hermaphrodite of some point, because, or, you know, it's an extraterrestrial. So how would you identify the sexual organs of an extraterrestrial?
True.
Anyways,
that is very true.
I don't know, but he looks down there and there seems to be a male organ, or what is analogous to a male organ, enough for Strieber to identify it, because he remembers in his recollections in the book, like in the transcripts, he says, oh, it's not, you're not a female. What is that?
Oh, it's
that's
not a lady.
Not so female. So he remembers remarking on that. He felt like it was a female, but it might not have been a female, unless the, you know, whatever, they're from a different dimension. They're from a different.
Yeah. Who knows?
Is this the first time we've heard about alien genitalia? Cause isn't it usually just like
flat? Nothing.
Yeah.
Ken does. I don't think we've ever really, they would like really fucking describe it.
Yeah, it never comes up.
The cases that we went into.
Yeah, it never comes up.
The real details of alien extraterrestrial genitalia.
It's never been mentioned, though. Like, this is the first time where he's like, listen, there's something there.
Yeah. They got triangle dicks.
Yeah, man. Like, that's triangle
dicks. Hey, why not? They could, what, the shape could be anything. From a different planet, different solar system, different galaxy, different dimension. We have no idea what it could
be. So it's kind of, I always, like, you know, you think of the Greys, like the fucking angel in Dogma, you know, when he like whips that shit out and there's nothing there.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Just like a he's flat. It's a Ken doll.
Yeah. Right. Like, exactly.
But
like
this one wasn't. This one wasn't. The one that he thought was female was not so female, or that's what he got the impression of
what
made was
him,
going on there.
So what made him think it was female then? Until he
nothing.
Saw the fucking
like he just
hog.
Got he
female
that,
vibe.
And Klein, I think Klein like addressed that. Like he tried to ask him, he tried to elicit from him, like, why did you think it was female in the regression hypnosis? Like, why do you think it's female? He's like, I don't know. I just get a feeling that it's female, whether it's the sound of the voice or the posture it exhibited.
I mean, it could be neither.
I thought it was female.
It could be neither at this point. Like it's an alien species. We have no idea.
Right.
We got no clue.
He doesn't, know. And then he obviously his sentiments were wrong or whatever. Cause he's, yeah, it's whatever he felt there was something else. And then this.
Oh, he felt it.
He felt it, but also he wasn't feeling it because apparently the visitor, this female, that not so female visitor, asked him or inquired about the state of his dick because they asked him, like, you know.
What?
Yeah,
wired.
They specifically asked, like, "Are you know? Can you get harder?"
Like, and then, are you into that? Oh, so he was
that's
hard.
A specific phrasing.
So
he
was
in
a
the book.
So,
like it asked him.
Yep.
Hold on.
Can you get
hold
harder?
Hold on. All right. Let's get to the bottom of this.
Hold on.
He is hard. He's half masked here.
So he's
masted in some form.
Yeah, he's had half mast at least. I'd imagine.
So he just remembers that
because it's not. Can you get hard? It's, can you get harder?
Okay.
Okay. So like a quote for like, okay. So it's like, she says,
okay. Hold on. Backtrack. So he's naked as laying on a table, looking over this alien being like, oh, it's a lady. Oh, maybe it's not a lady. And then it asks him if he's hard.
Right. So it asked him, like,
can you get harder?
She asked him, but just kind of out of the blue.
Wait. Stop. So he's on the table. He may or may not have copped a feel.
Oh, she copped. That's right.
Right?
Yes.
He cops feel. And then this thing goes, can you get harder?
Can you get harder? Like, he's already a little hard. Yeah. Can you get...
Why is he... Hold on. Break this down even further.
It's the triangle.
We gotta do math. We gotta do some math.
This guy reaches out and grabs a crotch of an alien.
After cop... Is that where he cops feel? Because I thought he was a lady because it had boobies.
Well, I thought he said it wasn't a lady based on the cop in the field. He was like, whoa.
So he saw the boobies, thought it was a lady, and then he copped the feel.
Then he copped the feel, and then he's like, whoa, something's down there. But he reached out to cop the feel, and then the thing goes, can you get it harder?
So
what you're saying is some might say both, the best of both worlds?
Yeah.
Nope. Some people might say that.
Some people might say this.
Whatever floats your boat, man.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
Fucking rights. Do your thing.
And so he just remembers, like, trying to tell the visitor, like, I want to go home. Like, I want to go home.
And then it asks him jokingly,
he thinks it's
a lady, and he's like, oh, okay, cool. Stick a needle in my brain. Everything's cool. I don't give a shit if this room's messy. Let's have some fun. And then he comes to feel downstairs and he's like, I want to go home. I'm not having fun anymore. I want to go home. My Sanuk.
So she said, like, and then the visitor addresses him and says, like, what if we don't let you go home?
Oh, shit.
Excuse me?
Sanuk.
Pineapple. Pineapple.
Holy fuck.
But he also gets, he also remembers in the regression hypnosis sessions, like, he recalls having the kind of intuiting that they are kind of fucking with him. Like, that's kind of the idea that you get from this, because it's like they're kind of like messing with him, because at one point they say, you are the chosen one, and then he's like, this is bullshit, and they're like, no, like,
what, in
no,
the sense that we chose
like, one we're tonight. Just like, we're just messing with you, kind of like that's how he felt, like what they were, what, like how they were kind of either playing with him or something. Like, it's very strange, the kind of the way that it goes from, like, it shifts gears so quick in the recollection of this thing, where it goes like these things are messing with him, then it's very quickly into a type of kind of sexual situation stuff going on here. And again, out of the blue, they kind of ask him, like, he says I don't know how I ended up here, what the hell did I do to attract all this? And then she asks, like, if I was hard as I could get.
Hard as you could get.
And he didn't know what she meant at first. And then he kind of just said, I guess I am. And she goes, can you get harder? And he says, fuck. Can I get harder? Oh, Lord, didn't know I was hard like that. No, not with you around. I can't be harder. And what would you like me to be? She says. So.
She's mystique. She can go to whatever form.
That's right.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's, she gave him a taste. Like, hey, you like these ones or those ones? Which one do you like? Do you like both? Take what you want.
Get whatever you want.
Okay. That makes more sense now.
And so, yeah. But he says, you know, what would I like you to be? I'd like you to be a dream, because he just wants us all to be a dream and this never happened.
That's fair. All right. The guy's sitting on a bench. The guy's sitting on the bench rock hard.
Yeah. Fully torqued. Guy's fully torqued, being like, oh, I just want to go home.
And later on, he can recount, they have real human-like mouths. I'll tell you that much. Real human-like mouths.
Hers specifically, I don't think she did. She had some.
He describes them like this.
I don't know if that's specifically the one he was talking to. I think he said something about her having like saggy lips. I think that's.
Listen, you know what?
He did
though?
Say, like, saggy lips.
I can
point.
See where he's coming from, because like after the whole triangle incident, I'd be like, nah, I want to go home. It's just got way too weird. Just send me home.
So wait. So she's asking.
Beam me down, Scotty.
She's asking if he can get harder. Does that mean she's trying to extract some sperm from him, like some genetic material? Like,
yeah, perhaps, but they can't. They don't. Not in that regulation. That doesn't really come up.
Yeah, but they've done everything evasively. They've gone up the butt. They've gone into the brain. Why not just go into the fucking nut sack. Like that, like, why are they going to suddenly get all
they
sexy?
They need consent, right?
Apparently, they can not for the sodomize for the other you way. And brain fuck you, but they can. They need consent for the rest.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
So this would kind of kick off this entire thing. The both Whitley's initial recount and then the regression hypnosis things, like these would be the big things that a lot of people would fixate on in his book and which would become very much kind of cemented into UFO lore. And the way that Whitley, when he came out with these details of his experience, he went on TV shows, he went on book tours and things like this, coming out saying these and saying that these things happened to me and making a very public display of coming out and supporting, you know, standing by the things that he said happened to him. And then he became, you know, when the book was published, this became like he became a pretty much big figure in the UFO culture at that point. And then a lot of people would start coming up to him and being like, I had similar experiences or these things, you know, it wasn't like UFO abductions started with Whitley Strieber. They had already happened, that people had already been experiencing them for decades.
Well, you had Betty and Barney Hill and shit before this, right?
Yeah, you had Betty and Barney Hill and plenty of other ones that came after that. And yeah, so but his whole thing of like making it popularizing it, or, you know, when this came out, it just somehow that I just remember this book, like, from, you know, I spent my, you know, when I went to the library, first place I would hit was like the paranormal section. And then it would be Whitley Strieber's book, Communion, A True Story, would be in there, and you pull it out and you look at that creepy. I just remember that creepy cover art and it's like, I knew of it. I never wanted to read it because it's fucking creepy, that thing. I don't want that thing staring at me from my bookshelf or something. Yeah.
You imagine reading that as a child?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And so he would stand by it, and I think he stands by it to this day about this being. But again, in his entire book and writing the entire book, he doesn't say 100%. That is extraterrestrials, that these were beings from a different planet or something like
never
that.
He just confirms, but he leads you down that avenue.
All right. Well, like, listen, like, to be honest, like he recounts more and more stuff as time goes on. When was this? In 2009, he recounts back in 1988. He wonders what happened to his semen. He has a hazy memory of being shown a baby by a visitor who came upon in the basement of his upstate New York cabin. He has no way of knowing if the baby had anything to do with him, but he had a strange sense of loss ever since 1988, even though he never mentions it till 2009. And he even says he never mentioned it until this article he wrote.
Sure that's the year both you and Zell were born. Maybe you guys are fucking Whitley Strieber's long lost fucking alien babies.
How much money's he got?
Not much. So, I think he sold a lot of his property.
But this is what
stuff.
He says. he calls these things visitors, right? And then he goes, this is also the first time I've ever mentioned this event. The reason that it tears me to pieces every time I bring that little sleeping face to mind. The baby was angelic, radiant, but being held by no human mother. Right? So
that's the thing. Like, he doesn't give these people any like geological demographic, right? Like, he doesn't say, these people are from Earth. So when you say visitor, obviously you think it's from a different planet.
Well, you would think, right? Like, not necessarily.
Where you don't think it's like, oh, these fucking guys are from Mexico. Like,
yeah, but
you would
maybe
describe them if they're from Mexico.
But maybe it's like right? A Dr. Mike Masters thing where it's us from a future.
But are we visitors? Yes. No, we're coming from Canada. We're coming from
Strieber
fucking
would go on to write many books. Like, he would go on to write like a couple, like direct sequel to Communion. And then he'd write like two or three more that had to deal with the same subject matter or rehash the same experience over and over again. I think he also popularized the idea of, or one of the concepts that he had in his book was the screen memories. So screen memories is kind of defined by him as the, perhaps some type of like psychic covering that extraterrestrials would put because that they would glaze over abduction experiences with another memory, like another type of thing. So after Strieber's start,
or you're trying to just cover up for the fact that you bullshitted people for a long time.
Earth, it's like they do that. They mention that in People of Earth, where it's like the one of the characters like remember. Well, I don't want to spoil it for anybody, so I'm not gonna. Whatever. But anyways, he goes back and he has these specific memories that he starts recalling, like after his regression, he starts doing regression hypnosis and therapy. He starts like he has these vivid memories of owls. So he starts fixating on these memories of owls and being like, perhaps these are memories because they're so strangely vivid to me. And these that I pick them out so easily in my memory that these are memories implanted to cover over previous abductions during my childhood, because he goes back after another couple regressive hypnosis sessions. He goes back 12. And he says that he recalls strange experiences when he was in his youth.
But even before that, like he was swearing that he was in Texas in 1966 at that mass shooting at the fucking university. And there he says that was his screen memory. And then all of a sudden he recounts it being like, oh, I wasn't there. Like, I don't know why those thoughts got into my head.
Well, and also like throughout the years, he would recount seeing different people die. It was two women, then one woman, then a child on a bicycle.
Right. We're talking about the Texas Tower shooting in Austin in August 1st of 1966, where Whitley Strieber, in his book, he says that, he remembers telling people that he had been there, but he hadn't actually been there. And then he would go on to talk about like, maybe this was a screen memory. And then he would say that, no, it was real. I saw this person get shot. I saw this young boy on a bike die in front of me. And then from recounts and corroborated stories, like nobody ever saw anybody who was on a bike get killed during the shooting.
Yeah. No kid died. No kid died on a bike.
So, a lot of people would take this to be like, well, this calls his whole credibility as an experience into question.
He started because came up with like screen memories.
Right. Or perhaps, the idea of screen memories. I know he specifically cites like owl, like he's seeing like owls are the things that they use in his memory to screen these experiences and the memories that he has.
Screen memories like, isn't that an actual coping mechanism for like other trauma survivors? Not like of abduction itself, but other people.
Right. So it's kind of like that, but he talks about it like in that specific context for him, like in the abduction ones at them using like a specific thing.
Cause so. that's like a Freud term. It's not screen memories. Like if you had a traumatic experience, you had some type of assault on you when you were young, you would screen that with something else to make you kind of cope with it better.
So it's like a defense mechanism.
Yeah, exactly.
Like block out
the bad shit, right. And you kind of place it where like, oh, that was this, and then later on in your life, you maybe go back and the screen memory fails you, and then you kind of like go back to like a regressive, like a traumatic state. But
right. So he says that these.
If that was the truth, if those really happened, I would never remember a single Detroit Lions game. I wouldn't even be a fan. All this stuff behind you would not be here.
All the screen memories would be just, you'd never get rid of them. It'd be gone.
Well, and then he goes on to write, I think he had a book, was it called Confirmation?
Yeah.
He writes Confirmation, and, this draws some satire from South Park. They have an episode called Cartman Gets Anal Probed. Much to Strieber's chagrin, he's not very happy about that. But in the publishing, like in the buildup to this, he books himself on a late Craig Ferguson show, which is a comedy late show.
And he's awesome.
Yeah, the guy's hilarious. He's a comedian. Yeah. And Whitley Strieber becomes wildly offended that a comedian makes a joke asking him about Uranus. It's shortly after this that Strieber, I think, because he's the laughingstock, he never once used the word rape until this point. After he becomes a little bit of a laughingstock with the book Confirmation, then he starts saying that like, oh, is it funny that a male got raped? Is that funny? Is that what's funny is that I was raped? It's tough. It's a tough one for me because he's using like, trigger words. But it's like if you do those exams, if a vet does those exams on a cat, we don't go, you rape my cat. So it's interesting because I'm like, well,
I find that he may be using those words at this time now just to avoid any further ridicule. Like, he's like, this is his shield to shield himself from, you know, the obvious jokes that have been made at his expense.
Right. Now, that's pretty much the whole story. So there's a couple main theories. Number one, he actually did get abducted and people ridicule him because the story is so ridiculous. Number two, it was some type of dream, hallucination, something in his mind, and he seen an opportunity to write books and to profit. Those are like the two main theories. What do we think?
Are we getting final thoughts here?
We're getting final thoughts?
Let's get in final thoughts. That's all the main points, right?
I'll kick it off tonight.
Go ahead. Sure.
So I think Whitley Strieber is a little bit of a con man and he manipulative, and he sees avenues to try to make profit. And this is a story he works up himself for fame and fortune, right? He directly profits off this story. And we see, you know, he's been caught in lies. He wasn't there. He didn't see anyone get shot at the Texas Tower shootings. He wasn't there. Fact. Never happened. He changed his story a whole bunch of times. He flat out lied. I don't believe any of this happened to him. And so now I believe he changes his story, you know, and tweaks it and shields himself by using hot button words like, I was raped by aliens. One, it's a great headline. I mean, it gets a lot of clicks. And I have a hard time believing this guy. I've listened to a lot of interviews with him. And it's just conveniently that he gets these memories. Like in 2009, he had a memory from 1988. And he attributes, he's like, well, they showed me a baby and I felt lost ever since. And I'm like, well, how did you feel lost ever since when you just remembered this memory? I'm like, none of his shit adds up to me. I'm like, it's a classic guy. He's just trying to capitalize. And this was his big meal ticket. Like, this story was the one that really made it for him.
Andrew?
It's me tagging in.
Yeah. Tagging in. You got him in. Andrew,
so
go.
I'm tagged in. All right. So let's start here. Let's get into Mr. fucking Strieber's credibility. 1986. Strieber wrote a fantasy novel named Cat Magic. It was published with a co-author credited to be Jonathan Barry, who was billed as an aerospace and industrial consultant and a practicing witch or Wiccan.
Dope.
All right. In 1987, the paperback edition, Strieber states that Jonathan Barry is a fictitious and that he is the sole author of Cat Magic. So there you go, right away. The co-author is supposed to be a witch. Backtracks. Why would you lie about that other than to create credibility for your fucking book?
Right.
Right? Oh, yeah. No, I got a real witch that's helping me write this fucking book. Okay. Then let's go into his recent books. The Secret School, in which he wrote about his recovered memories from childhood of a secret nighttime school out in the woods run by aliens. Strieber also recovered memories of the past life in ancient Rome. According to Strieber, he was a tutor of young Octavian before he became emperor. And thanks to his great tutelage, Strieber was personally responsible for the Roman Empire lasting another 400 years.
Tutelage? That's a great word.
Yeah.
He also went back in time as a child to comfort Cicero just before he was executed. Okay.
Okay.
So those are part of his regress memories.
Bold right claims.
Now, also, his recent book, The Afterlife Revolution, was in 2017, where this book has been co-authored with his wife following her death in 2015. He also has kept on her fucking blog going that she writes through him. He is the vessel which she writes this blog through. Okay. So this is something that jumped out to me that was extremely important after doing research. Sorry, I'm fucking drunk, boys.
I love it. I fucking love it.
I'm fucking liquored here. I'm not drudgery drunk, but I'm fucking drunk. So here, you want to know what Mr. Strieber did before he started writing books? Do you guys know what he did? Do you know what he did for a living?
What's that?
He worked for several years at an advertising firm in New York City, like rising to the level of vice president.
Dope.
And that's what he did before he quit to become a fucking author. Okay.
Sci-fi author.
He's come out and said, I don't know why, but I lied about this fucking 1966 Texas shooting incident. I wasn't there. I didn't see it. But, you know, but I said I did. I lied. If someone specifically tells you they cannot be trusted, you should not fucking trust it. You should not trust them. Every chance he gets, he smuggles himself in some fucking self-serving way in his stories. He lies about how the aliens are interested in him for his brain, how God is reading over his shoulder as a child, how aliens want him to meditate so his soul will physically survive going on into the infinite. He's a textbook fucking delusional narcissist.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, he is. It's ridiculous. This has all been fabricated bullshit. I'm sorry. This guy's a schmuck. I don't buy into it.
Those are Andrew's final thoughts.
Sometimes you get a call as you see it. There you go.
Yeah.
I can't buy into it. I've been really trying to buy in lately, but this guy's a fucking schmuck. I can't buy into it.
And Andrew, just to your point, the reason you bring that up, it's funny because Whitley Strieber reviews a lot of YouTube videos and podcasts and stuff. He'll put a review in and he'll put a negative review if people speak critically of him.
I hope he does it to us.
That just goes to your point of that this guy looks up his name at all times and is like, are people talking about me?
Expect a bad review for this one. Yeah.
Sounds like
I hope he reviews us.
I hope he does. I'm going to get it fucking put on a shirt.
Yeah.
Strieber, suck my ass.
I'll go really quick and then we'll end off with Dan. I 100% agree. Every once in a while in this field of study, ufology, ETs, the phenomenon, you come across something that holds no water. And I think this guy, he's one of those. There's no corroborating witnesses. There's nothing to the story except his word written to a book sold. I don't know how many copies it sold. It must be millions of this book. Like this is probably one of the most successful authors to profit from their experience from the story.
Right, from their abduction experience.
I think the abduction phenomena for many people is like, that is a true thing. Like that's like, they don't go on to profit for it. It ruins their life for whatever reason. Like it's a terrible traumatic experience and that's the end of it for them. And they don't know what happened or why or what the reason, and that's the end of it. And then for some reason, this guy, that was like the beginning of it. And everything since has just led to a bunch of shit, you know? It's a bunch of shit. You gotta call it. Sometimes in this field, you gotta call it as it is. And it's like, this guy, come on. Really? That's what I think. I think it's like,
It's a fugaze.
Dan, what do you think?
Well, reading the entire book, like you go through most of the book, there's the experience that most people talk about, and that is the one that he writes out. He writes out in the beginning of what he recollected before he went to the regression hypnosis, and then the stuff that he recovered after the thing. Regression hypnosis has become not the, you know, the end all of recovering memories, as we've seen, we now are more understanding of kind of like the mechanics of memory and how it serves us and how it disserves us a lot of times. And so it can't be depended on. You can't really say like, well, regression hypnosis, especially when you have the UFO guy who is like a central UFO figure in the same room as you at the same time, like while you're having this regression hypnosis. If you go through some of the transcripts, like you go through some of the questions are a little bit kind of like, well, I would to Dr. Klein's credit, I think he asked a lot of questions, but sometimes like Bud Hopkins will be recorded, like he'll be quoted as in like kind of throwing in a question that seems kind of leading. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of like, well, I don't think you should ask that because now the whole kind of calls a lot of stuff into question. Is he just like, are you egging it on? Are you bringing in more stuff that doesn't need to be there? So whether the entire account to me is very disjointed and just kind of stuff kind of comes in and out, and there are a bit more like there are conflicting things in the story and bits and pieces that you kind of pull. It's easy to pull a string and then the whole thing kind of falls apart for me. Like there's a lot of places for them to do that. But the thing about it, like it trying to explain some of this stuff, when he started talking about like after the experience or after he had this, whatever it was, he started feeling the mood swings. He started feeling the, he said he started having kind of like a fever of some type. Like he started having like, like his body temperature change and things like this. It kind of sounded like, I was like, is he having male menopause? And I looked it up. I was like, it was a real thing. Cause I was like, he's in his like mid 30s at this point, having this thing, he's having this. And like, so some of the, you know, I went to the like Mayo Clinic website and I was looking it up and it's like symptoms: reduced sexual desire and activity, decreased spontaneous erections and erectile dysfunction. Two things that could possibly really affect your psyche at that point. You know, if he's, you know, he was saying he was in a kind of like writing slump at this point, like he was kind of losing his creativity at this point. Other possible symptoms include decreased energy, motivation, confidence, depressed mood, poor concentration.
So it's just like low testosterone?
Yeah, pretty much, low testosterone, yeah. Essentially.
Okay.
And so he went to get tested because he at first thought he was getting like a brain tumor or something. It says that as one of his first assumptions. He went in, got a CAT scan, none of that. But I don't know. You know, it's his medical history. I don't know if they tested for this. Like even back then, would it have been something that they tested in like the late 80s or something like that? Would they test for low testosterone? They don't usually do it. So it sounds like that could have possibly been a contributing factor as to what it could have cemented exacerbated the entire thing. Like part of me feels like, sounds like you're having like low testosterone. When I looked it up, I was like, all this kind of slots into place about the how he was feeling, his entire disposition after the experience.
Mixed with some stressful dreams and then boom.
Yeah, like that's it though. Like I don't care how low your test goes. You're not seeing fucking tan colored aliens.
No, I'm saying he had the experience and it just made it worse. Like right, that yeah. kind of like
exacerbated that, it basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. That possibly that's what it sounded like to me. And when it,
I mean, that checks out.
I read it.
I mean, it's,
yeah.
So his whole, like I said, his whole book thing kind of just, you pull at one string and the whole thing kind of just falls apart.
Unravels
for me.
Very quickly.
I'm sure it felt real to him at the time, or
I don't think
he describes in the book.
He's full of shit. It's never felt real for him. Cause he's making it all up. And he doesn't
like
to
sell a fucking book.
Yeah, he's trying to sell a book, and now he just he doesn't like being laughed at.
It's on the
defensive.
Because
this is his bread and butter that he still makes money on is talking at conferences and talking about abductions
This is still a man with talent. Like he's a great writer. He's intelligent. He can put things together eloquently. Like. He has ability to sell this fucking story. He is a storyteller, right? Like this is the perfect person to fabricate
books?
A story like this, right? Exactly.
Yeah, he writes
books. Like this is his, that's his job is creating stories. Of course he created a fucking good story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like that's how he pays his bills.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some people who go through his books, like authors that have gone through his books and said that they're telling pieces and within the words that how he does, like how he writes that, they're like, this is how I would write if I wanted people to believe me. If I wanted people to do, not that I'm writing about an experience, it's that if I want to head people off at the thing, I want to tell people that, you know, about the UFO stuff. Like I would say, I was never interested in UFOs. I don't think you have to tell anybody that. Like you wouldn't have to tell anybody that if you were writing just to recount an experience.
Yeah.
But he writes that stuff like, I never was in, you know, I never had any interest in the UFO or beyond a passing interest in the UFO culture.
And then that brings you back to stuff like the messy room, like the unnecessary detail in the situation. Like you're fucking strapped ass naked to somebody who's about to butt fuck you with a triangle. You're not paying attention to a fucking messy room, right? Like that's unnecessary fucking detail. Like that's somebody that's creating a story. You know what I mean? Like that's just, I don't know.
Agreed.
Weird.
It's a very popular case, but sometimes the popular ones aren't
He's still a big name. He's still, like he said, he was at Contact in the Desert. Like he still shows up and does talks and things like that. But again, yeah. But Andrew said, he is a writer. He is intelligent. He is eloquent. Like he can put stuff together and you can sound like you believe him. Like,
yeah.
Oh yeah.
Anyways, it's fun to look into, you know, people have been asking for a while and it was a,
everybody likes anal probes. Likes us talking about anal.
Not
probes.
Him.
Not as much as Braden.
Not him. I tell you, as much as Braden. That's one of his things. He's like, he says in one of a recent article,
Surely his experience is worth more than official denial, media lies, and rectal probe jokes.
Is it?
Is it?
Well, that's like half our show.
It's not, it's not something to joke about.
Get a bad review.
Review's coming.
Yeah, well, we'll talk a little bit more about him in After Hours because I think he's a fucking absolute slime ball. And I'll get into why on After Hours. So, Whitley Strieber, if you want to listen, head to our Patreon, $5 a month. Then you leave us a bad review after you listen to it, buddy.
Yeah, you can't leave reviews on Patreon, so perfect. Oh, fuck. My, 1 second here. The computer's all fucked up. 1 second.
Oh, no.
Not again. This motherfucker. It's fucking... Is this, second
what do we need? You, Dan can sing the song. He can do it.
No, it's Theater of the Week.
What the fuck?
The following announcement has been paid for by alien theorists.
These motherfuckers are back again.
God damn, they got us again.
WWE. Godfather here. And the ATI, man, Alien Terrorist Illuminati.
Terrorists.
They're a bunch of super fans out of Canada. They want to congratulate Braden, Zale, Dan, Andrew, Brian, and even Scotty, that jabroni, on 200 episodes of their podcast. And congratulate Zale on his new baby on the way.
That's now public.
I want to say howdy to all y'all. Keep smoking. Keep doing those good podcasts. And it's time, once again, for everybody, and I'm going to go ahead and mention them, including Braden, Zale, Dan, Andrew, Brian, and Scotty, the jabroni, to come aboard the Ho
Snow Train.
I love it.
200 podcasts, that's a lot, man. Peace, guys.
Oh, that's fucking awesome.
That's cool.
That's fucking dope.
That's fucking awesome.
We're my bitches.
Oh, fuck. These guys are at it again.
I actually don't know what there is. Is there a secret society just around to congratulate us?
Damn it. What's their end game?
Yeah, what's their end game here? Because they're starting to pump my tires a little. I mean, this guy said my name right. Byron's wrong.
They get Byron that was a Brian, but that's all right. They keep showing out Mr. Conspiracy maybe a little bit too much.
Yeah.
Like he got well, a suck it. He got a jabroni.
He is a jabroni. I mean, I love The Godfather. I know him more as Kamel Mustafa.
Yeah.
Mustafa.
Nation of Domination.
Yeah.
What? Papa Shango before that, right?
Papa Shango.
I knew he was. Yeah, I was like, wasn't he Papa Shango?
He's Papa Shango.
I think he probably had one of the best number of like successful like
character runs for sure.
Character runs.
100%. Yeah.
Well, what the fuck? What was? Oh God, I can't remember. Not Tough Enough. What was the when WWF actually had like real fighting, like real boxing?
Oh, what the hell was it called? I don't remember. But yeah,
dude, he was a badass though. Yeah. He was knocking dudes out until he fought fucking Bart Gunn.
Yeah,
Bart Gunn fucking starched him though.
Yeah, I remember that.
Awesome. What was that called? That's gonna drive me nuts now.
Who won that?
Bart Gunn.
Bart Gunn won it all.
He fought fucking Bradshaw and fucking beat Bradshaw's fucking ass.
That's right.
And then going into WrestleMania, he had to go up against Butterbean.
Yeah.
The biggest mistake in fucking WWF history, putting a fucking wrestler up against a professional boxer murders people.
Absolutely murdered.
I was like 12 years old and I was like, this is a mistake.
Mistake.
Like, I used to play Fight Night and I'd play as Butterbean every time. And I'm like, Butterbean used to fucking kill people, man.
That's all that weight behind those punches.
See what he did
to
Johnny Knoxville?
Yeah, killed him.
Don't fuck with Butterbean,
man. Is Butterbean okay?
Yeah. Dude, Butterbean's the man.
Yeah, he's fucking dope.
Anyways, why don't we do Theorite of the Week?
Theorite of the Week. I think after last case file, this is a fitting Theorite of the Week. We got to give it out to Uncle Slam on Discord.
Oh, yeah. Guy's a beauty.
For making Secret Agent Dan, Maester Dan, the spy who shagged me.
My cover's been blown.
And Danny English, the 3-movie collection.
He's now known as CIA Dan. It's a thing. That's him. Dan, the CIA man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We'll make sure to include those on the weekly roundup. We put them on our socials. It's just fucking good. Just awesome. So Uncle Slam, Theorite of the Week on Discord. We appreciate all the support.
And we just, before you get into the new Patreons, shout out, the ATI had their own little meat draw. And the winner was Phoenix House. He's on Discord now. So congratulations to him. I'm surprised the ATI even followed through. Again, not us. We had nothing to do with that. The secret society in our secret society that is Discord.
Alien terrorist.
The alien terrorist. Illuminati.
Hey, listen. Wait, we ain't giving out no freebies, man. Yeah. Obviously, it's not us.
We're broke as fuck, man.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Come on now.
So you can thank the ATI for that. And I guess we'll wait and see what else we got. Zell, let's hear those Patreons.
All right. If you're not supporting the show, when you want early access, bonus content, we're doing it. Every week, a new episode, bonus episode, every single week, live streams, all the other goodies, patreon.com/alientheoristpodcast, or find the link in the podcast description. This week, we got Casey Lambinus, Aaron, Alec Helms, Broken Race Car, Phoenix House, there's always one, Yerma Wolf, I'll go with that. Christian McGraw, Courtney White, Jesse, Ethan King, a longtime supporter. Lizard Caveman goes up to a $16.66 pledge. The 1666, can't go wrong. And last but not least, Matt Skoll, thank you very much for supporting the show.
And as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies.
See you in After Hours.